Now it is time to play.
I came to bring the pain, hardcore from the brain. Let's go inside my astral plane. Find out my mental, based on instrumental. Record, hate, so I can write monumental methods. I'm not the king, but this is decaf. I stick them for the cream. Check it, just how deep can get. Deep as the abyss.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 9 of the Notorious POD. It's amazing, you know, I would go weeks without doing a single recording, and then, you know, do a bunch all in a row. The occasion for today was I just got super interested. There's a great article that was written in Chicago Agent Magazine titled, Can You Live Without the MLS? And it was one of the more balanced, I think, sort of approaches I've seen. Really fantastic, really well done. And there were a number of people who were sort of interviewed in it, and I thought it would be really interesting just to, you know, get them on the phone, have a conversation, you know, that I would ask them sort of about, you know, what they said in the magazine, and it would just maybe delve a little bit deeper than perhaps a magazine article could get. And we have three people here, and there's a fourth who is missing in action. But let me introduce our special guest for today. First is Mr. Russ Bergeron. He is the CEO of MRED, which is the MLS for the entire Chicagoland area, the entire Chicago PMSA. We're not sure what P stands for, but we know that it includes the city of Chicago and a number of counties. And he's one of the largest MLSs in the country with about 37,000 members. Russ, are you there?
We're here. Good morning.
Good morning. Excellent. Also joining us is Leslie Ebersol, who is the broker associate for Baird & Warner at Chicago. And she also was interviewed and quoted in the magazine, and she's a good friend of mine, and I thought, wow, this would be a lot of fun. Leslie, are you there?
Hello, Rob.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
All right, and then joining us is a new friend. I've not met her in person yet, but it's a real pleasure to have Katie Spaniak. Is that how I say it, Katie?
That's correct, thanks.
Right.
Thanks for asking me to be here.
And she's the broker associate focusing on the North Shore for At Properties, which is a major brokerage out of Chicago. And Michigan action, but he may be, you know, dialing into this.
I'm here. Sorry.
Oh, there he is. Your punishment, I think, is to introduce yourself, Matt.
I'm Matt, and I guess I have a problem with being on time.
All right, well, that is Matt Dollinger, formerly of At Properties, formerly of Trulia. I understand you're now the tech editor, actually, for Chicago Agent Magazine.
And amongst many things, yes.
Yes, and you're also the proprietor, founder of Gearbox Consulting.
A good way yes, sir.
All right. So the topic really is, you know, just discussing the article, but I want to use that as a springboard for some of the notions and concepts. You know, I'm glad you joined us, Matt, because I think you might be the first person I would start with as the tech editor. Give me sort of your take on the article, what you thought of it, you know, since you were not interviewed in this thing, and we'll go from there.
You know, I think that, and as I've said in a couple of things, I'm sure that the different MLSs in each areas obviously are different entities. I believe that we are, and Russ is not paying me to say this, but I think that we in Chicago, having worked very closely with MRED, I think that we're very blessed, and I think that Katie did a good job of kind of bringing up that point up, that Russ has really taken the forward thought on this and said, my agents in Chicago that, you know, pay their dues to me are part of looking to us for not only for the data, but in some cases leadership. I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to vet new products and provide these things to them to help them become better agents, and not only do that, but to educate consumers better and help them make more intelligent real estate decisions. So I can only speak for us here in Chicago, but, you know, I think that MRED has done a fantastic job of doing that. And not only has it gone through and helped agents who might belong to either they belong to a smaller brokerage or they might have their own boutique thing and not have the benefits of a huge educational or coaching or tech department, But even the larger brokers, I know that one of the things that we did when I was working with At Properties is that Russ actually has free training on the programs that the MLS provides, and they will send a trainer out to the office to teach on, you know, whether it be the search providers or, you know, the Thing or Goomzy or any of the new products or Realist that are essentially very difficult to for agents to grasp and left up to their own, you know, surmises. Companies don't have and trainers don't have the time to keep on top of all these things. So I'm in a huge belief that, you know, to start out the very opening statement, can you survive without the MLS? I wouldn't even want to think about surviving without the MLS in our neighborhood, but I think that has a lot to do with what Russ and his team have really done.
All right. And I just want to make sure, Russ, you didn't intend to say that, right? I mean, just, you know.
No.
Although Russ has introduced me as Mr. Fabulous in a couple of
years. Yeah, it's true. I have made him famous, though, but, you know, other than that.
So, Leslie, Katie, let me ask you guys this. I mean, obviously in the article, you know, the conclusion from it, you know, there's nothing in it that suggests that, you know, anyone could live without the MLS, okay? But I almost got the feeling, and especially springboarding off what Matt was saying, you know, as agents, as brokers, you know, within this market, can you live up the without the MLS in its current form, you know, with all of the products and services that it offers? Maybe, you know, maybe I'll just say, Leslie, you want to take that, and maybe Katie after?
Sure. Could we live without it in its current form? Well, you can, houses will still get bought and sold regardless of the MLS or the internet or the syndicators or anyone else. What is more interesting is what the, and maybe I'm jumping ahead, sort of what Russ's vision, which is articulate and quite robust, what is the role of that vision with both the syndicators on one side and the brokers on the other? So it's a little bit like, maybe government services from your city government. Once those services are provided, people are unlikely to give them up, and then that would then affect the services for private providers.
Okay. Katie, what do you think?
You know, when I was interviewed for this article, I even questioned why this was a question. I thought, well, you know, of course we can't live without it. And one of my main reasons, I think Leslie is right when she says, you know, houses will be bought and sold and we'll still do our work. But what I know is when I go into the MLS, there are so many specific rules that we have to follow as far as how we are inputting our listings. So, you know, for example, if we put square footage in for a house, we have to say if it's per the assessor or per the builder or per the owner. So I think that that's important because that way I know. The house may not be exactly 3,000 square feet, but I know if it says assessor, I know that that's going to be standard across the board. If I see that the seller, the owner of the property, says it's 4,000 square feet, that can be, it may be higher than what it really is. So you know, okay, well, the seller is saying that. So I find this to be apples to apples. And without having the MLS, I just don't see the regulation of how we are inputting our listings to find exact comps for the other. So to me, that's a huge factor that would be taken away if we were relying on other sources to find this information.
Okay. Russ, let me, you know, Leslie just kind of gave me the next place to go. She mentioned that you have a vision, which is very robust. What is the vision? Share that vision with us.
Well, I guess it's kind of evolution is the way I was looking. I was sitting here ruminating while you were talking, and I've been in this business long enough to go back to even pre-book time, and I remember when we used to have tear sheets that were delivered to real estate offices every week. And when we went to the book, people thought, oh, my God, we can't do that. That's like giving away our proprietary information. And And over the years, obviously, it's gone gangbusters with the introduction of computers and then, of course, the Internet. What our goal is, one, we try to identify products and services that will assist our agents in the buying and selling of real estate. I mean, Leslie's absolutely right. Before there was any kind of computerized MLS or even books, listings, properties got bought and sold. That was the nature of MLS. It kind of created organically. And if we can continue that through innovation and technology, we free up the agent and the brokers to be able to do what they do, which is the consumer interaction, if you will. Even with all the technology we've introduced over the years, buying and selling of real estate is still a one-on-one operation. It's you getting that buyer and that seller together, sitting down at the table and negotiating that price and so forth. No amount of technology is going to take that away. But if we can free up your time to be doing that, then we've done a good thing.
Russ, I want to come back to that point you just made, but just to make sure, it almost sounds like you consider MRED to be, you know, almost like a technology and services provider. Is that a reasonably accurate vision?
Yeah, actually, I see no problem with calling it MLS that. I mean, we obviously started as a, quote, data repository, a broker cooperative, if you will, and obviously recent developments have brought that more to the surface, which I'm sure we'll get into. But,
we'll be coming back to that.
But we are obviously getting involved with technology. Many MLSs, especially the good-sized ones like us, have the ability to get more deeply involved in that technological side than, say, your average brokerage or even your average MLS, because there are still a lot of small MLSs out there. I was at NAR yesterday, and Dale Stinton made a statement that there's 1,400 associations out there, and 1,100 of them are 300 members or less, which I was amazed at. So it kind of shows the separation, if you will, in the level of expertise that you can bring to the table. So obviously with 37,000 members, we can probably do a whole lot more than the 300 member board can.
Sure. All right, but I want to ask you the point that Leslie kind of made earlier, which is she sort of put it as that the MLS is in some ways, I guess, assisting let me do this. Leslie, what did you mean when you talked about, you know, there being something between brokers versus syndicators?
Well, the way that, and I think I know mostly from Matt, and then I'll learn more from Katie, App Properties and Baird & Warner are both large independents. And part of the way they compete is by making the agents better, right? With the marketing programs from App Properties are truly impressive. Baird & Warner is known for its internet presence and for agent training. And those are important for our competitive advantage in the marketplace because we compete against one another. The MLS has evolved. Of course, it's to our advantage, and just like I think Matt said, I think Baird & Warner highly leverages what MRED provides. I don't think a week goes by when we don't have Carrie Bayday. She's one of the MRED trainers who I think we've leveraged pretty highly out in our office. So there is benefit to any size brokerage in leveraging what MRED provides. I hate to use the word, but the double taxation of paying to participate in what MRED provides to our competitors, plus developing training and enhanced versions of products and services within the brokerage, you just have to think about, I'm running a business. Do I want to pay to enable my competitors? Russ would argue, I'm going to speak for Russ here because I think this is what he has said to me, aren't you better off if your competitors, even if they are your competitors, are better trained agents? They can get through a transaction better. People don't dork stuff up, like Katie said. Everybody gets our listings in better. On the other side, though, the syndicators, you know, Zillow, Trulia, and Realtor.com, are also aggressively building tool sets. And when I say aggressive, I mean aggressive. I'm pretty involved with Zillow, was in the past, especially with Matt, with Trulia. And they're just snapping up these great little agent-oriented products. And eventually they're going to be providing full product suites around CRM and client contact and contact management. And they're even stepping into training, you know, Zillow Academy. I've done webinars for Zillow Academy, and some of the best people in the country do these great sessions that you can access at any time. Realtor.com is, I think, with some new hires, going to be doing more of that. So, Robin, am I making sense? I spoke too long. But there's a lot of competition for working directly with the agents.
So, Matt, I mean, I wanted your perspective on this. And, again, I understand you might have some NDAs in place, things you can't talk about. But, you know, you were at a very large brokerage at Ad Properties, and then you were at Trulia. So, you know, what do you think about what Leslie just said? I mean, in terms of providing tools, you know, services, training, that sort of thing. Is Trulia being aggressive? Should they be?
Well, I think that, I mean, I don't know if it's the should they be. I mean, that's more of an ethical question and a one-off. But I think that what Leslie says has a whole lot of value there, where it's essentially there's if you look at it, there's two silos that I think a lot of these tools are geared around. The MLS, at least, again, speaking specifically for MRED has provided a lot of tools, you know, The Thing, a mobile application, Realist, DynaConnect, all of these things to help the agent, Cloud CMA, to help the agent do a transaction better, to help them become a better educated, more intelligent person. And as my wife being a top producer, Leslie being a top producer, Katie being a top producer, all of them have dealt, and I'll go on a limb here, all of them have done a deal with a subpar agent that you have to stop and sit there and go, how the hell did they get this client and how the hell do they keep them? So I don't think any agent in the world would say, wow, I wouldn't like to do a deal with an agent on the other side who's more informed of, you know, the market and what's going on and the fact that my list price is really well thought out and strategized. But then there's this other side, which is lead generation and, you know, how to outsmart your competitor or things like that. And I think that Russ and MRED have kind of – they really haven't invested in that silo, which I think a lot of the syndication platforms and other things really have. So that's where I think that the big – you know, the differentiator has to be acknowledged here. Is that are you trying to make agents smarter, better, more educated, and educate their consumers better? Or are you trying to give them pay-to-play products, not based on their intelligence or their ability as an agent, but essentially to snag leads and convert them? And I think that that's the big difference between what the MLS is providing and what these syndicators or other places are.
So let me understand this real quick. First of all, just a question for you, Matt. That might have been true until Trulia went out and bought Market Leader, right? I mean, Market Leader, you can't say it's just a lead gen platform, right?
Yeah, I guess.
Okay, so, yeah, I mean, you're going to grudgingly agree that. Okay, Leslie just told us she participates in things like Zillow Academy, which seems like it's not just, you know, sort of a lead gen focus. So, I mean, what's the difference between what the syndicator is doing and what Russ is doing in terms of the first part of your answer, you know, making agents better, you know, so that everyone will have a smoother, better transaction?
Well, I mean, honestly, let's take a look at it from a strategic standpoint here, where Russ, you know, Emirates is not a public-facing company. They don't have stockholders and shareholders and things like that. So, personally, I mean, and not to talk down to anybody or anything, but I mean, it kind of comes down to you and say, do you really think that Trulia and Zillow are trying to make better agents, or are they using that as a carrot to get agents in to buy their other products?
Good point. Russ, let me ask you a certain question. What do you, I mean, given the same question I just asked Matt, I mean, what is the difference between what a Trulia or Zillow or even Realtor.com, you know, it provides? Because they do a lot more than just lead gen at this point, right? They do tools, they do training. And what's the difference in that and what NRED is providing?
I think Matt kind of hit the nail on the head. We are, I don't want to say association-driven, but we kind of have that mentality in that we are a private club, if you will, of the brokers who are members of us. We, and again, their main focus, the Yazulias of the world, are consumer-focused. MLSs are not consumer-focused. Obviously, brokers would like us to be broker-focused. Unfortunately, most of our users are agents, or in Illinois, they're brokers. But we, at least at MRED, have been told specifically by our brokers, do not be consumer-oriented. Mm-hmm. So we do not deal necessarily directly with consumers. Now, we do, obviously, through our system, we have 3.5 million logons a month by consumers, but that's through the prospecting engine of Connect MLS. So we have, I don't know, 250,000 buyers in our system that get listings sent to them every day through Connect MLS. But we don't deal directly with consumers. We're not an advertising model. We don't even like to be called a marketing model, but
Right. Obviously
we are to a certain
extent. There's more of a productivity training model.
Yeah, it's. It was meant to be. MLS has started in the, you know, in the general store when the guys were sitting around talking. Hey, I got the Johnson's Farm for sale. If you bring me a buyer, I'll split my commission with you. And that was the first MLS. And it's now just morphed into what we have today, where we've taken advantage of what's available to us. And but we don't. We at MRED at least don't actively court consumers. We support the ability to get to consumers, whether it's through IDX or VOWs or whatever, and that works out just fine. But yeah, I think the third party aggregators are kind of changing their model. But again, I think it's more to bring in the agent community into there, because you know a lot of their apps and widgets and things like that are cool. But they also serve to bump up their SEO and bump up their user counts and all that kind of stuff. Because if you're using a Zillow or a Trulia widget, you're not getting credit for it. Zillow or Trulia is getting credit for it.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Katie, let me ask you the question but add a component to it. What I'm asking is in terms of the productivity and agent focus, not consumer-oriented, but productivity tools, agent tools, training that's really geared towards the professional community. What is the difference between what you would receive from MRED versus what you would receive from, you know, like one of the, you know, syndicators, or Zillow, Trulia, you know, Realtor, and what you receive from At Properties, your broker? What's the difference?
Well, you know, it's all extremely different. I still go back to me, this isn't a question. The MLS is where we initially put our information in. That is truly for the agents. As Russ said, you know, we provide that information to consumers. The Trulia, Zillows, that's really consumer focused. And so they're just two completely different platforms, which I feel are both extremely vital to agents. You know, one is the research that we can provide to our customers, and the other is a way that we can market our homes. So, you know, as far as training, it's really different. It's just very different because they're two completely different products. I think they work really well in conjunction with each other. And I think that marketing my homes on Zillow and Trulia is absolutely effective and important. But for the education of the agent, I feel that MRED is just, you know, where we need to be. As far as At Properties, you know, I think that some of the larger companies they're not necessarily differentiating them. So they want to use the MLS you know, they're feeling like we have a level playing field, is from what I'm understanding, is this why this big question has been raised. At Properties has really said, okay, that is an even playing field. We are all the same on that. And what we are going to provide our agents is much more than that. And so they go out of their way to take a step above what is considered to be a standard playing field that everybody's going to have. I don't think that At Properties is, and I, you know, this is just me talking as an agent, I don't think At Properties is necessarily saying we don't want our other, you know, other agents and other companies to have this information and take that information away from what the consumer is going to get. They're saying we want, that's a level playing field. We got it. That's, you know, everyone's going to have that. We are going to provide more. We are going to provide our agents more so that they can differentiate themselves, so our properties can differentiate itself.
Okay. All right.
Rob, let me just back up on that as well. I think that if you're looking at it just from the training perspective as well, it's kind of it's your think about it almost as your sales funnel. It's your national, regional, local. It's, you know, the syndication sites or our outside sites are able to talk, and we're talking specifically on the training aspect. They're able to talk about big picture aspects. Like, so let's take a look at like market data. Truly yesterday did Jed Kolko, their economist, did a what to look for in the market in 2014, what's going on, that type of thing. Truly's not able to talk about specifically Katie's market of Northbrook. You know, they talk about the nation as a whole. MRED has the ability to talk about that as a region. You know, I forget how many counties MRED actually serves. Is it five, Russ?
Oh, more like a dozen.
Okay, a dozen. A dozen counties, and so they're able to talk about that data from a 12-county area. So there you've got your regional aspect. What our goal was to be able to talk about all of these things, and we would recommend things like, you know, the Trulia webinar or the training that MLS would do. But then also, we as the company were able to know exactly what was going on in our specific offices and how those differed from the regional and national aspect. We were able to talk about specifics in Katie's market or in Leslie's market or something like that. So I think that that's kind of your difference. If you look at it from the funnel aspect, it's your national, regional, local aspect that you can really train on.
Well, I mean, I don't disagree with the geographic breakdown, Matt. I just don't know how relevant that is to what I'm hearing as kind of the core conflict here. And you know, obviously, we all know we're going to talk about the Realtor Alliance at some point and some of those issues, but. You know, it like on the lead gen front, it seems pretty clear that, you know, that there is at least understanding in the Chicagoland area that lead gen is something best left to the syndicators, is best left to brokers. It's not something the MLS should get involved in. But when it comes to productivity tools, right, when it comes to the idea that, you know, what we need to do is help make transactions less painful by making sure that agents are well educated and, you know, have the right tools so that they can go and do these things. It does feel like to me that all three are kind of playing in the same pond. I wanted to move to Les, what do you think about that? I mean, are they playing the same pond? Are they not playing the same pond? What's the difference?
I think they are all seeking space in it. And again, I see that from participation, you know, with all three. Owning what the agent interacts with every day is turning out to be really, really important. It's not just lead generation, and I will not go on to one of my CRM jags, but it's CRM is the most important topic in agent and broker management today, in my opinion, because it's where we store our data and how we interact with our clients and how we use technology to do that it's about productivity. It's about gaining and keeping your market share. It's about leveraging, you know, the client base that you already have, and about creating new clients and owning those tools is going to become increasingly important. And under CRM, I'm not talking about lead management, I'm talking about transaction management. Mm-hmm. And so whoever provides those is going to have a relationship with the agent that may, in fact, supersede the relationship of the brokerage. And we've talked
Let me ask you then about that. So this is more of a, I think Matt called it an ethical question. Who should provide that, Leslie?
You know, Rob, you probably opened up my eyes more than I expected to have them to be open, in that while loyalty to a brand has always been extremely important to me, at the end of the day, I am in the client service business, and I'm going to get the services from the best provider.
Okay. Same question, though, for everybody. Maybe just go Katie, Russ, Matt. You know, who should provide that CRM?
Oh, you know, that's a tough question.
I know, that's why I ask it. I'm good at those.
Yeah, you know, I think the way I view my profession is I really feel as though I have my own business. And so I find different tools for myself, different things. And so I guess I really rely on myself to find these different things, and I look at every possible resource, kind of like Leslie's talking about, is I look at all these different things. So it's not as though I feel as though I'm entitled for somebody else to create this for me. I go out and I find the best things, and I think that's actually what makes me a stronger agent, is I'm always looking, I'm always researching, I'm not just falling back on somebody to give me those things, I guess.
Russ, you're here.
I probably agree with Leslie that this is probably one of the most important aspects, both the CRM and the transaction platform. We've had a transaction management system here for 12 years. If we get 6% usage of it, I'd be surprised. We have a great document repository capability, which to me is the most important piece, especially for the broker. If you'd be able to track your transaction and see that all the documents are in place, yada, yada, yada. You're handling risk management. You're handling your customer. As far as CRM, we provide lots of tools for agents to use in that vein. I get a kick out of the latest NAR survey of buyers or customers said that 89% of the people said they would use the same realtor again.
Yeah.
10% actually did.
Yeah.
So that either because a real estate transaction doesn't happen that often, or their original agent just didn't stick with them and say, you know, I want you to be a customer for life. Even a simple thing like in our system, you know, the prospect system, you can continue to use that even if your client has already bought a house because they want to keep up on their neighborhood and so forth, things like that. So anything you can use, statistics, you know, we have, Matt mentioned a thing we just enhanced it today by rolling out InfoSparks, which is even a greater version. It's by the Minneapolis Association 10K. It now has dynamic links so that within your blog or you're on your email or wherever, you can now put a dynamic link to statistics for your market area and keep your customers up to date on what's going on in their neighborhood. I mean, so things like that. Again, we don't tell agents, we don't tell brokers how to do their business. We're just trying to help them do their business.
Matt, same question.
I've been sitting on my hands here. here's my take on this, is that a brokerage needs to provide, it's required, I think, to provide an average solution for quarters or quartile 1, 2, 3, and 4 for a lead management, CRM, conversion, whatever. They need to provide a C-plus version that will play well to those quartiles. The top quartile agents like Katie, like Leslie, they're going to continually look for something better, new, something that fits the way they run their business even more effectively. And that's something that when I was working in the broker service, we didn't worry about that. We played to the middle, and we knew that these agents would be looking for something like that. And Katie and I had coaching sessions where she would bring an idea to me, or I would recommend something to her that we didn't provide as a company, but would be best suited for her business. And did I fear that Katie was going to go, wow, now that I've got this new cool thing, I'm going to leave the company? Hell no. I thought Katie would probably look at it and say, wow, somebody in my company was really looking out for me and for the best opportunity for me to grow my business and help to recommend this to me. And that's where the loyalty to my company comes. We didn't operate on fear, and I never have. And, I mean, Katie can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that that went a long way with the agents that we were dealing with.
And Matt, I completely agree with you on what you said, Matt. Exactly. That's exactly – it's not a fear. It's a collaboration. It's knowing that I can have my base of what I provide to my clients and run my business, but I also have this support system that's willing and energetic and providing me with additional tools, additional resources that I, of course, need to act upon.
Katie, let me ask you about one specific tool, because this was mentioned in the article, and I thought it was potentially one of the most interesting parts of the can you live without the MLS? Can you, for anybody who hasn't read the article, can you tell me a little bit about the new AdProperties app that appears to do pre-market and pocket listings for AdProperties? Can you tell me a little bit about that app?
Yeah, absolutely. It's actually more than that. I kind of, when I sit down with a client, I tell them it's kind of like Facebook with all of our agents involved. So there's a lot of communication, because what used to happen is we used to have all agent emails, and you would end up with hundreds of emails, you know, a day. I've got this listing coming on, or I need a handyman, or can anybody help me with a pricing in Northbrook or wherever. And a lot of that communication was missed. And I think that Thad and Michael realized that one way for us to expand and become better agents was for us to be able to communicate better with our peers. So that's where this was spawned from. So what happens is that if somebody is getting a listing, let's say, or even talking to somebody saying, you know, I might potentially be able to list their house, I'm going to throw it on the app and see if there's any interest. It's really a communication tool. It is not something to bypass the MLS through, or to, sell it before the other agents are able to see it. It's really a way to get information for us. So it's the internal agent app is what we call it.
Mm-hmm.
It's been really fantastic, but not because I'm selling my listings before they go into the MLS. I actually right now at this stage of the game in the marketplace, I feel that anybody who sells a house without it going into the MLS is probably leaving money on the table, just because there's so little inventory. I don't know how long that's going to be like that, but I think it has to be opened up. So the way I'm using the app, for example, I had a house, a wonderful house, beautifully done, higher price range, above $1 million. And the owners wanted to list it $100,000 above what my suggested list price was. And the problem with the house is that it was sort of sided up to a busy street, and it had no backyard. It had a side yard.
Mm-hmm.
So I posted it on the app, and I said, you know, I have this coming on. Does anybody have any interest? I had about 5 to 7 agents reach out to me and say, yeah, I'm going to have my people drive by it, or I'm going to have them look at it. And I got feedback from about 3 or 4 of those people saying they're not even going to go look at it because of the side yard. So when it went into the MLS, I already knew. I mean, I knew we are high. You know, we are priced really high, and we got an offer within 3 days, a really good offer. It wasn't list price, but it was a good offer, and it was higher than I suggested our list price, our initial. So my clients felt very comfortable knowing that, you know what, we're getting this feedback already. We should go ahead and work with this person. So I find it to be a tool for communication, not just to sell listings before they go into the MLS.
Okay, but in the article, you are actually quoted, you know, and it actually does say that's true. That may have been true in that one experience, but it does mean that properties is selling homes before they ever go on the MLS, and fairly often. That was the question, and I think what you had said was you're providing a competitive advantage to both your buyers and sellers. Right. So
right.
How does that work? I mean, are you allowed to sell properties through this app? Is there a brokerage rule that says you can't do that, you have to in the MLS? How does that work?
Well, I mean, now we have to have our clients fill out a form that says that it's not going to be that they know it's not going into the MLS until
right.
a certain point.
Right.
So that's and I know that Russ can talk more to the legal ish. I'll say legal.
Well, I'm going there next.
Okay, great.
I just want to make sure I understood this.
Yeah, and there are people who do sell it through the app. Absolutely. Some people do that. I find it to be much more of a communication tool for me and for my clients than pre-listing. I have to say that here in Northbrook, I have seen way more sold before processing taglines in the agent remarks from the other companies than I see through app properties, because I think that they are doing that more frequently. And I know that, I think, and Russ can verify, I think that that's no longer allowed to be used, the sold before processing comment or something like that. It's where the other agents are selling it before and then still putting it into the MLS.
Leslie, does Baird & Warner have an app like this?
No.
Do you think they should?
I'm thinking.
I mean, in other words, what I'm asking is Katie correct when she says this is a competitive advantage for, you know, app properties, buyers and sellers?
Absolutely, it's a competitive advantage. Anytime you get agents talking to each other about what's going on in the market, it's a benefit.
Okay.
You know, the days of walking into the office with your, you know, freshly inked listing agreement and waving around, that's normal human behavior. If I walked into the local Remax office and had somebody said, "How's it going?" I'd say, "Oh God, I just got this great listing over in Fox Mill," and standing in the Remax office, I am now, you know, promoted even before it hits the market. So communication is good. I did see that I think somebody, Sam Powell, I think showed it to me. No, that couldn't have been her. Somebody, and it's cool. It is disingenuous for a broker to say, and by broker I mean brokerage, to say we don't want to leverage our listings and obtain additional buyers. It isn't true. So anything that can, and putting aside dual agency, we have single agent dual agency in Illinois. This isn't about the greedy agent. Anything that you can do, though, to get your own broker associates and agents to sell your own listings is obviously in the company's benefit. So, yeah, I would say it's competitive advantage. It replaces the sales meeting as the I have, I want.
Okay. So, Russ, I mean, MRED, I thought, you know, you guys took a pretty hard stand, you know, against pocket listings.
No, we don't have any rules about pocket listings.
Oh, you don't? Okay. What is your stance?
You have 72 hours to get your listing into the MLS unless you've got a seller's exemption. We've had that rule for 20 years, so there was no new rule. We tweaked the form a little bit, and that's it. And we increased the fine if you didn't do it.
Okay.
That's it.
So here's what I'm wondering. The reason why I thought this was so fascinating is this is all coming on the heels of the Realty Alliance meeting. And, Russ, I know you were there.
The pocket listing piece all came first.
No, understood. But, you know, I'm looking at this app, And I guess what I'm wondering is, so like all the conversations you've had today, you know, can we live without the MLS? I think the answer is fairly clear, you know, that at least all the people on this call are saying, absolutely not, you can't live without the MLS. But there is this sort of notion, I don't even know that the Realty Alliance guys are saying they could live without the MLS. I mean, what I heard from, you know, those folks is they don't, you know, they can't live without the MLS, but they can live without the MLS in its current form. Mm-hmm. And I thought some of the stuff was around productivity, around some of these tools, because they don't want the level playing field. So Ad Properties has gone and done something here that is quite unlevel, right? I mean, this app, which Katie, you know, tells us is incredibly valuable. It is a competitive advantage, you know, for the brokerage and for the buyers and sellers, right, who are working with an Ad Properties agent. So if this thing takes off, does it have any impact on the MLS? In other words, let's say Baird and Warner.
Maybe we'll just go talk to Yumba or whatever the name of the company is that created that app, and we'll offer it to all 37,000 agents. Because the part that the communication piece of it, I think is awesome. I think that is great, and we should be doing more of it. You could probably do it on Twitter or Facebook without the app. But in Katie's example, I thought it was interesting that through the communications, said, "Oh, your price is too high," or whatever. Put it in the MLS and got a better offer. So, if had it been put into the MLS at the beginning, would it have gotten even a better offer? I don't know. It's too hard to say. But I kind of came to a revelation about the Realty Alliance thing the other day. And you'll be getting Cove Group put together a white paper on that, so you'll be seeing that probably tomorrow. What I think the brokerages are doing, because they've been crying poor all these years, even in the good times, and one of the things they do, and I'm not saying Baird & Warner or Ad Properties does this, is charge their agents a technology fee, and I've seen some of them as high as $4,000 or $5,000 per year.
Oh, wow.
And so what I'm thinking is, gee, maybe the Realty Alliance is just saying, we'd like to get that money, even though the agents don't use all the products, which is what they're accusing us of. But so they would rather see their bottom line increase through selling products and services to their agents and not having the MLS do that. And that's perfectly fine. That's a justifiable position for them. I mean, they've had title companies and lending lenders and so forth within their companies for years in order to enhance their bottom line, and usually they made more money with those than they did in actually selling real estate. So do we end up going to the stark MLS where you just put your data in and we feed you the raw data, and then it's up to each brokerage to do what they will with that? That's an option.
Mm-hmm.
Do we continue to do enhanced products and services? My challenge to the Realty Alliance, and it will be to, I mean, Baird & Warner is one of those companies. Koenig & Stray is the other one. They both sit on my board of directors. So I'm sure whatever they said in their list, they've already said to us.
the 47 pages.
Exactly. No, I could have written the list. It's... You know, we're not allowed to say that it's the same old stuff that we've been hearing for years, but it's the same old stuff we've been hearing for years. And now it's just delivered in a different way, in a threatening way. And I don't think went over real well. And you were there, and you saw Craig, I think, was mm-hmm. struggling. Because, yeah, I know Craig, and he's really not a confrontational kind of guy.
Oh, no. No doubt about that.
But you know, I see us probably finding some balance. I mean, my challenge to my guys is, okay, here's our list of products. In the magazine that came out today, of course, the ad we used for MRED is the one that lists all of our products and services. So I thought that was rather interesting. Go through that list and cross out any you do not want us to provide. Would be my challenge to a brokerage. Is tell me what you don't want us to provide, and we'll work with that. Or do we go to a strictly pay-as-you-go storefront kind of model where everybody pays for whatever they use? The problem with that is, one, it would be more expensive because you'd be selling to fewer people, which means fewer people would buy the product, and you'd get into the death spiral like we did with the books. You get more expensive, fewer customers, more expensive, fewer customers, and until some point there's no sense in even having that product anymore. So there's a fine line there that's going to have to force the decision between, you know, what is an MLS and what do brokers want to provide to their agents. And I see, and my take is, and you touched on it earlier, is that the brokers obviously provide the marketing, the branding, which is huge, because that's what people go to a brokerage for, is they're attracted to that brand, and they know they're going to get services that promote that brand and make them more popular in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that's just my position. I could be wrong.
Matt, let me kind of ask you to follow up on what just was said, and I think because you know time is starting to tick, I actually want to leave the last words for our sort of in the trenches, boots on the ground broker associates. So Matt, I mean, in thinking about the sort of overall latest conflict, the Realty Alliance, Big Broker versus MLS, all of this sort of thing, Russ had kind of mentioned that it's really about the brand, right? You are at a very large brokerage. You've done a lot of training, within that brokerage. What do you think? What is the proper role of the brokerage? What's the value of it, I guess?
First.
Hello?
You want us three? You want to go first?
No, Matt, you there?
I'm here. Sorry, I was on mute.
Yeah. No, that question I wanted from Matt, and then I wanted to hear from the actual, folks on the ground.
Okay.
What's the value of the brokerage, Matt?
First of all, I think that just to take a step back, I'm sorry to do this, but I think there needs to be really clearly defined boundaries about pocket listings versus pre-marketing. I just think that a lot of those things tend to get lumped together with that. So that's the only thing I wanted to just to go back to the original about the app and about all this other stuff and whatever. Mm-hmm. There's a huge difference between pre-marketing a property and a pocket listing where no one else is allowed to actually see it, or you're just trying to sell it internally or through a small group. So I think that just for future reference, I've banged this drum a million times, if we can differentiate between the two, that's a huge, huge thing that needs to be done. But to get to your question, the value of the brokerage, my fear about this, and this is probably going to get me a lot of trouble, but my fear of this that's going on is that the broker is in my mind, this whole argument comes around the fact that a broker is tired of getting push, evolve or do something better. Is that does this competition of the Truly or the MLS or people rolling out better tools, if this didn't happen, would that allow the broker to essentially not have to evolve and not have to push themselves to develop something better like the agent app or something along those lines? I really fear that that's what this could be perceived to be about, is that they want to be able to work ahead or move ahead at their pace and not have to say, wow, we're getting pushed to compete with this stuff that the MLS or that the syndicators are providing or whatever. My feelings, though, the true brokerage, the value of it is obviously branding is important, but in my perspective, in my history, the consumer chooses the agent and not the broker. They choose to work with an agent, not the company that the agent works for. The value that the broker provides to the agent, I personally believe, and this is kind of what we talked about with Katie and I in the past, is to create a supportive and productive environment for the agents that choose to hang their license with that company through leadership, through insight, through best practices, and help these agents to become the best that they can be. Some of that is very soft, where it's culture and things along those lines. Other is leadership and some element of technology, some basic right, telephone, email, you know, and that is evolving over time with document signing and things like that. But I think that a lot of this comes down to the fact that they need to be this environment that is invested in the agent's success and really helping them to develop a working and successful business plan.
All right. I'm going to let the let our two actual folks who are actually dealing with the buyers and sellers have the last word on, you know, what do you guys make of this sort of, you know, big brokers versus MLS versus syndicators, and also, you know, what is the value of the brokerage? Leslie, let's start with you.
Katie, you go.
Okay. First of all, I just want to say I completely agree with Matt, and it could be that we both are products of AAP Properties. I also have been with Prudential before. But I think that the role of the brokerage is, and I wrote down what Matt said, and I circled the word environment. And it is this positive, nurturing, energetic, supportive environment that I find to be just a great feeling to have. You know, AAP Properties has a tagline, love where you work. And it's true. And I feel like that's what I get from this brokerage. It's the support that I can do these things. I can go out there and be the agent that I want to be, that people want to hire me for. But with their support and their encouragement and their tools, you know, and their ideas, and you know, whether it be ideas through MRED or ideas through Trulia or Zillow or, you know, anything like that, we are getting that information from our brokerage. And so that's really what I think a brokerage should supply to their agents.
All right. Leslie?
The larger brokerage model of, we serve the, I don't want to say the bottom three quartiles, but we serve the, you know, the four, the three, and the twos. And we leave the top quartile to themselves because we do our own thing anyways, is maddening to me. It's backwards to me because the top quartile produces, you know, just a disproportionate amount of the revenue, disproportionate amount of the income. So I'm actually going to answer this with the MLS and the brokerage. Russ's has reminded me that if it weren't for the other, you know, 30,000 people, my fees would be a heck of a lot higher for the same products and services, and I respect that. And it's the same way within the brokerage. If it wasn't for 1,700 agents, you know, putting in money every month, if we were paying on, you know, per transaction basis, top producers would have a much higher fee structure. On the other hand, does your competitive advantage as a broker come from your bottom and your middle? Revenue, you know, a fairly reliable revenue stream comes. So I give that the background to say, you know, what should a broker be doing? You know, my vision may begin to stray from the corporate. In fact, I'm sure I do not speak for Baird & Warner on this, saying providing tools, products, and services to the middle kind of keeps you in the middle. It is getting more people a little bit more productive at scale is good for the brokerage. It's good for the brand because we do a great job at all levels of the company. But long term, I don't know how sustainable that is with the advent of teams, which are really operating as small brokerages buying services. I think some of the big brokers have some pretty rough decisions to make in the coming years.
Hmm. All right. Well, listen, we've just spent like an hour in one of the more interesting discussions I've had. Any last thoughts, any last comments before we all go on our way?
I think the only comment I have is kind of based on Leslie's last one is that the culture, the supportive environment, et cetera, is the, much like Russ says, it's the face-to-face that will never go away from real estate. The culture, the supportive environment, the, you know, the involvement in an agent's best, you know, practices and their success can never be duplicated. It is your competitive advantage. And it's not something that a CRM or online leads is going to change. You look at any of the surveys that talk about why agents leave companies, it's a lot of them have to do with the fact of, you know, their relationship with the manager or whatever. So I think a lot of this conversation talks very techie and very high level and all the systems and products and things like that. And I think that if brokers spent more time engaging with agents like Katie and Leslie and finding out what they really think, they could probably make changes that are less costly and more powerful than anything else. So that's all I got to say about it.
Right on. All right. Last words, Russ?
No, I'm good. I think we covered pretty much everything, just enough to get me in trouble. So.
Well, once again, I mean, this has been a real pleasure. I know you guys are very, very busy, and I really just appreciate you taking the time to have this chat with me. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Rob.
Yeah, thank you.
So, what do we think about that? I thought that was an incredibly interesting conversation, and I'm actually recording this commentary a couple of weeks just because I've been on the road and have not been able to record it. But listening to it again, you know, when I was trying to put this podcast together, you know, I guess the biggest takeaway for me is that the MLS is obviously still essential. You know, it really is central to the business of real estate. But I found, you know, what some of the agents were saying, that they regard the MLS differently now. You know, that it's really just a device. It's a place where you would go to try and get information on a listing or just inform other professionals, versus it's the source for leads. It's this place, it's how you would sort of advertise your properties. I think that's a critical point. You know, it really does speak to the transformation of the MLS. You know, as longtime readers, you know, which you're probably one if you're actually listening to this podcast, know, you know, I've been maintaining for a long time that the reason why the MLS became so powerful and so important to, you know, to the industry is because it was the sort of the lowest cost option. You know, it was the most cost effective way of advertising homes for sale. If that's really moved on, then I actually do think that there's a real challenge. You know, it's almost like you got to think about if the MLS is no longer the least costly, you know, if it's not the most cost effective way of advertising a property for sale, then it almost has to take on new roles. It almost has to take on a new identity for what the value is then. Right? If it's true that, you know, the consumer websites, the broker sites, the mobile apps, all this sort of newfangled technology out there is now, today, the most cost-effective way of advertising, then the MLS really does become just a B2B network, right? So maybe a way to think about, you know, some of the conflicts in the industry right now is that, you know, there are MLSs who see that and don't like it, so want to go back to being a super cost-effective way of advertising properties for sale. But of course, you know, that's a different order of magnitude challenge in 2013 versus, you know, say 1993. So that's one. The second thing that's super interesting is really what Katie mentioned about that mobile app, about that sort of pre-marketing app. You know, again, between the time we recorded this and now, one of the more interesting articles I saw about the topic was on Inman, where Frank Yosa, who I believe runs something like pre-MLS, you know, talked about maybe one of the things that big brokerages, you know, like the Realty Alliance or, you know, some of the more traditional mainstream large brokerages, maybe one of the things they can do is essentially leverage these pre-marketing of listings as a private network. You know, it's not quite a pocket listing, but on the other hand, obviously, because it is being, quote, pre-marketed, it won't be on the MLS. I actually find it really interesting that App Properties, you know, has this tool. Of course, Katie, you know, the App Properties agent who really uses it, you know, talks about it in terms of it's not really a listing. It's more of a communication tool, you know, with other agents in her office. But at the same time, you know, as you mentioned, you know, there are people who use this to sell properties. Well, you know, that could be a real fundamental shift, I think, in sort of the relationship between brokerages and agents, relationship between agents and the MLS, relationship between even consumers, buyers and sellers, and what they think of as being real valuable. I probably have some more thoughts on that at some point in the future because, you know, we're now well over an hour. And if, you know, you've listened to all of this, then perhaps the last thing you want to hear is, you know, me going on for another 30 minutes. In any event, once again, I really would like to thank Russ, Matt, Leslie, and Katie for, you know, spending some valuable time coming on and having that conversation with me. And I thank you for listening to us talk about these important topics. Thanks again. See you next time. Is it real, son? Is it really real, son? Let me know what's real, son, if it's really real. Something I can feel, son. Load it up and kill one. Want to feel, son, if it's really real. When I was a little stereo, I listened to some champion. I always wonder when I would be the number one. Now you